Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Today we are venturing to Philadelphia to talk to Andy Holmes, who is a wonderful singer-songwriter and also a fantastic bartender at a couple spots, one called Martha, one called the International Bar, and it turns out he and I have partied in the same house. Not at the same time, but the same house. So let's get down to chatting with Andy, and maybe we'll even hear some of his music.
I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself, though, formally. Tell us your full name and where you work, that kind of thing.
My name is Andy Holmes, and I work in Philadelphia, two bars. One is called Martha, and the other is called the International Bar.
The International Bar. It sounds so swanky, but Martha's kind of a nice little place, too. I have family in Philadelphia. I have not been out there in a couple years because... I think they don't actually live in Philly proper. They're a little south. They've scattered amongst like the Lancaster Amish area. I think the closest to Philadelphia is probably Phoenixville or something like that. But we do make some trips up there. And I do have an artist friend who is a skater who lives in Philadelphia. So so whenever I get, in the past when I've gone there, it's been like punk rock bars. I can't remember which ones.
So. A chance talking about a guy named Adam.
I am. You know Adam Malkovich?
Malkovich, yeah. I went to a pretty wild 4th of July party at his house this year.
He's a really amazing human, like truly.
I've heard I'm seeing his kingdom there.
Oh my God. I haven't been to his place in a couple of years, but it's so beautiful. So beautiful.
Mesmerizing, yeah.
My brother lives in New York, and he and my brother and my brother's girlfriend they spend regular time together. So that's how I got to meet him. That's amazing. Of course, you know him. That's so wonderful.
I was on a Tinder date with someone the day before. And my buddy's band was playing. You know, Adam does a lot of like film work. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the night before, things were going fairly well. And I was like, hey, Sarah, like, what are you doing tomorrow night? She's like, well, mm-hmm. I'm actually going to see this show. And I was like, oh, cool. I was going to ask you to go to the show. So now I don't have to. I'll just see you there.
Oh, sweet.
She was like good friends with Adam. I've only known him through other people. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, shit. I've like always wanted to like fucking hang out at his house and see it. Is he going to listen to this? I don't know.
But probably not. Probably not.
She was like, well, he's having a party that night. I was like, sick. Second date in the bag. I actually didn't see her anymore after that. But I did go hang out at Adam's and sit in the opium den.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. It was birds. Yeah.
The first time I went, one of those birds passed away. I was very sad about that. The main little bitty, I'm forgetting, he called her like Lovely something. I forget, he had a cute little name for her. And she, but you know, it was a little old bird. But yeah, that opium den, when I walked in, I'm like, can I just have this whole room? Please ship this to California so that I can live in it. So amazing.
I mean, how did you even get that in there? That's the question.
Yeah. And this is the thing. I went there and we immediately started talking about music and everything. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, we might as well just dive into the music side for you because there's a guitar in the background. I have a guitar in the background. Not like I can play mine.
Mine's all for show now too. So
it's only for show for a little while. You've been a musician for how long? When did you first start playing?
Oh, I got my first guitar when I was 11. So
20. I was 8 when I got that one.
Wow. Yeah, I got like 24 years of experience.
Yeah, see, that's the difference is you kept playing yours. Mine just sits there and gets really dusty. So when you started playing, did you like beg and ask for it when you were a kid? You wanted to have a guitar?
Sort of, yes. I don't know. Are you familiar with the show The Wonder Years?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
There was the episode where Kevin joins a band and is the, you know, they're terrible. He gets his little guitar and they're rehearsing out in the garage. I'm like, I see something for myself here. And so, yeah, I just worked that way. And then my oldest brother was in a band, as far as I can remember. He's 12 years older than me, so since I was probably 4 years old, he's been playing bands. And then my brother-in-law, when he came around when I was about 10, I think they collectively decided they were going to get me a guitar. Mm-hmm. It was like a little $50 nylon string mini guitar that they just taught me like Green Day songs and Smashing Pumpkins and Radiohead. Like,
Did they let you play with his band? Did you ever get
No, they were like a psychotic like math rock band called The Grumble Bunny.
That is a good name though.
I didn't get a chance.
So then when did you actually have your first band? Did you realize those Wonder Years dreams and have you and your friends playing in the garage?
Yeah.
And how old were you? Were you like 12 at this point?
No, it took a couple of years, but I taught my friend Mark Mowbray how to play guitar. He was a little bit older than me, but just a super dorky guy like myself. And his mom had a guitar, like a super fucking nice, like Alvarez acoustic guitar. I remember exactly what it looks like to this day, what it feels like. And he'd never played, but his mom did. And so I just taught him a few chords, you know, dot, dot, dot. And then we started a little band with some friends. And we used to play in like the local church gymnasium.
was it a church sponsored event, or did you just invite your friends there and do the shows?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I guess it was like a church sponsored, like a youth group thing. But we weren't really, we like covered Violent Femmes and Weezer.
Well, was this
Art in Danger?
Oh my God. Was this in Philadelphia? Did you grow up in Philadelphia?
Rocky Mount, North Carolina.
So. Okay. Okay.
I grew up down there and came here just a little over 7 years ago.
Okay. So, cause that makes more sense because I grew up in San Diego, which, you know, people are like, ooh, San Diego, big city. But when bands would tour up until fairly recently, I mean, I say that, but it was probably like the mid to late 90s. They never would go to San Diego. The giant shows would go, like U2 or something would go to San Diego.
Sure,
wouldn't get, there wasn't really club shows. You know, there weren't really a lot of places for like kind of that level of band, unless you were 21 and over. And then there was like maybe one or two places. Mm-hmm. So we had bands playing in gyms. It would be like, you know, some punk band would come through and they'd play at the Boys and Girls Club. Sure. And I'd stand all the way in the back because I didn't want to get banged up, you know, because it was full mosh pit action, you know, 15-year-olds slamming up against each other at the Boys and Girls Club.
I think Fugazi has famously played some like high school gymnasium shows.
Well, I've seen
videos of them like Ian MacKay singing, hanging on through the basketball hoop.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's like Fugazi. I know Rocket from the Crypt, which they were from San Diego, but they would never play in a proper like venue. The first couple years anyway, they would only play, like they would play like at a ballroom in a hotel, or, you know, they'd always find these weird places to play, you know, it would be some like church auditorium, or maybe it's like some honky tonk somewhere. They'd play these places where they weren't supposed to play. And that always made the shows interesting. Totally. Right. So, and then Fugazi with the whole straight edgy thing, I feel like they had a rule too. I can't remember what it is right now, but
the
I feel like
was all ages. Yes. No show costs more than $5.
Yes. Yeah.
Probably some other rules that we don't know.
I think there were some rules. Yeah.
Shirt in.
Totally. So you guys were doing your violent femmes in the church hall shows as well.
Yeah. We threw in like, you know, some crowd pleasers here and there.
But you kept playing. You got out of high school.
Not that they were just saying what those songs were. that was a relatively short-lived venture. And then I moved out of Rocky Mount as soon as I possibly could. It's not a good place to grow up. Wasn't a good place to grow up. It's been consistently ranked one of the most dangerous cities in America from the time I lived there until this very day.
It's a bummer.
It's a really big city that has small town syndrome. And I moved to Nashville after that, Tennessee, which couldn't have been a more opposite culture shock, if you will. and the band, I started a band there with other people that we went in a very different direction of what our peers were doing. Didn't go so well. I moved back to North Carolina after 4 years in Nashville. So at this point, I was just before my 22nd birthday, I moved back and then started cultivating the music scene or the people in the music scene that I always felt like I wanted to be around. And I met some, you know, people to this day who are still collaborators, best friends. You know, I'll be in their weddings, they'll be at my funeral. I found a really special home there in Raleigh after kind of bouncing around a little bit from my teen years into my early 20s. And it was sad to leave that behind, but Philadelphia was a whole other, and I needed to get out, you know, one of those situations. I needed to find some fresh new ground and plant my feet somewhere. And so here I am.
So you made it to Philadelphia, and you've been in Philadelphia for like 7 years, you were saying?
A little over seven. Yeah, I'll be going off it next year. But
and how's the music scene there been treating you? I mean, there's a lot of music that's come out of Philadelphia over the decades. A lot of different kinds of music that's come out of Philadelphia.
I would say it's been challenging, especially coming from Raleigh, where I was playing in relatively popular bands. Not like the band I had that started there. Like, we had been playing for 4 or 5 years, and then had a, you know, decent group of listeners and fans, if you call them fans, whatever. Just the local scene there was a lot more like adaptable. And then I started playing with a touring band, like a hired gun, playing guitar in that band. And so that my final 2 years in Raleigh, I did that. And, that was a really hard thing to leave because it was a full-time gig. You know, I was bartending at the same time, but I would also leave for 3 months, go cross country.
I was going to say, what was that like? I mean, touring not easy. It's not easy. You know, I mean, a friend of mine would always say that you only pay when you're paying for the ticket of the show, you're actually paying for the 22 hours that they're not on stage. You know,
they're all that
drive time and all that gas station food and, you know, stuff like that.
All those porta potties, those motel bathrooms. Well, I will say that was my first time ever really doing extensive touring. It was always, you know, before that, it was to New York and back, which was New York, Philly, Baltimore, DC or Richmond, you know, something along those lines. And then this is my first time ever really getting in a van and leaving home for an extended period of time. And I was such a fucking amateur. you know, it was like party super hard the first 3 nights you're on tour. And then be stomach sick like the rest of the time, but never stop partying, you know? It was just one of those things that I had to learn the hard way, and being away from home for 40 days. And I was like kind of on a special diet. I wasn't eating any gluten or dairy. And that made it very difficult because when you go to shows, they're like, here's a bunch of beer and
pizza. Yep.
So our tour manager was like, all right, I'm going to give you like $50 to go to Whole Foods. Buy all the things you need. I don't want to hear you fucking complaining about how you can't eat anything. Get you a bottle of wine per show. You don't drink all the beer. So it was fine. But I, you know, after that, I came back home and I was like, yeah, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I'm really like, I'm not cut out for it. Turns out I just needed to work on, you know, some physical health issues for a while and then go back out, because the times I've done it since then, you just got to control yourself. And that's much easier said than done when you're like, man, I could go party with these random people and be out till 5 in the morning, or got a sweet little hotel bed waiting for me. And I'm just, I'm going to get up and go for a swim.
Eat some fruit.
All part of aging. Yeah. You know,
and, yeah. Some people, well, you know, the other thing is when you're on tour like that, you're with the same bunch of people day in and day out. So sure. when there's yeah. someone new in the mix, you kind of are like, oh my God, I can experience something different. You know, you can just like, you know, it's a new conversation to be had. I'm sick of smelling these people, you know, it's an all new world there.
I'm going to fall in love with somebody out here in this world. Let's give it a shot. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So has guitar been your only instrument that you played? That's it.
No, I mean, I've been recording on my own here in Philly for like the time I've been here, just doing everything myself. So I have some drums in the basement. I have some drums over here and a bunch of keyboards. I have a piano downstairs. So
Yeah, well, talk about your band now. Your act now. It's Astronaut, right?
Well, Astronaut was just the name of the song.
Name of the song. Okay, so tell me about you, what you're doing now.
Doing just like a solo project since I moved here. It started out, let's see how I can make myself not sound lame.
There are a lot of solo artists in the world. It doesn't sound lame to say that you're a solo artist.
I think I always wanted to be, you know, like a Dylan or a Townes Van Zandt kind of guy. And then I realized it's really like, you gotta be cut from a certain cloth to pull that off, so. All the federalists say they could have had him any day and only let him slip away out of kindness, I suppose. After I started, you know, doing like singer-songwriter stuff, I started incorporating more instruments into the mix and like drum machines and weird keyboards. So I would still consider it like a singer-songwriter thing. But I think that terminology is so bordered to a lot of people. They're like, I'm not sure you can really encapsulate all the things.
It encompasses a lot, but I think like you said, people hear the term singer-songwriter or folk, for example. Yeah, you know, you're a singer-songwriter and they just think Dylan.
Or Simon Garfunkel, or these people that are
And that's like the end.
So many great songwriters out today. And originally the project was called something else, and then someone convinced me, like, it's just you. Just use your name. I'm like, I think my name's stupid. It's silly. I didn't even think of it. My mom thought of it for me. Then I realized, nobody knows who this other name is, and people know me as Andy, so I'm just going to be me, and whatever comes out. And I feel like there's a lot of different elements to each record I've made, and over the pandemic, I even made a kind of like a doom metal spoken word thing.
Nice. Very appropriate.
I was talking to my girlfriend. I was like, I'm going to put this out, but should I call it something else? And she's like, no, just leave it under your name. I love when people do that. I'm like, oh, that is kind of cool. Just like, you never really know what to expect until you dig into the catalog. And while I think it's hard to get people to dig into my catalog at this stage of my career, it's out there and it's going to stay out there. So one day people will hear it and be like, oh, wow, this is fucking weird. I like this guy.
Yeah, that's amazing. So since you've been doing the music thing for like your whole life, pretty much, it sounds like, when did the bartending thing kick in? Was this I need something to pay the bills while I'm doing my shows and writing my music, you know?
No, I would say it happened a lot more organically. Because my older brother, not the one I spoke of earlier, I'm the youngest of five, so...
Are they all brothers?
No, two brothers and two sisters.
Okay. So. Okay. At least I was like, man, I would really feel for your mom if it was five boys. That'd be a lot.
Two boys in her life were enough to,
keep her busy.
Five or nine. So, she's got that to worry about, but not anymore. Really. She's still worried. So my older brother, who's nearest me in age, is 3 years older. He was bartending at like an old country club in Rocky Mount for a little while. And somebody just came up to him and was like, hey, you'll make a bunch of money doing this. And so I started kind of doing like catering events for this lame, like all white country club, which you know, I was 15, 16 at the time. I was looking back, I'm like, man, that was, that place was really shady. Really fucking I think of legend, it goes that Michael Jordan, the basketball player, was denied.
In that place?
Yeah. You know, he's a fellow North Carolinian. But
he wasn't.
I learned shortly after my brief tenure there that they were kind of racist. And so we moved on. We went to work at, he and I both went to work at a little like sort of cool, like all your friends work there, Mexican place. In it's called Tico's. And yeah, it was like the spot to hang. And in Rocky Mount, we didn't really have bars that were, you know, places that you and I would probably hang out these days. But Chico's was like the spot. It was like the cool kids worked there. So that was really my introduction, but I was bar backing. And then me being the workaholic that I am, who refuses to go home at every hour of the night, all the other bartenders would ask me to stay and do their side work for them. They'd be like, oh, I'll kick you an extra 10 bucks and a few cigarettes. I'll give you some weed. Here out the back door. So I'm like, all right, cool. So I really started like getting into the bar scene very, very early, like 15, 16 years old. But basically just pulling side work. And then I went to work for other places and it just became natural.
And you were just, you just picked up enough along the way that you could bartend. And
I always loved like bar backing and being behind the scenes, especially in like certain places I've worked. But yeah, I got back into it pretty much full time here in Philly after a few years. And then after, or during the height of the pandemic, I started working again for Martha, actually. They had asked me, like, is bartending something you want to do? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to make to-go cocktails all day for people and, you know, have no one to interface with. At you know, when you're bartending at times, you're like, oh, that would be great. But
yeah,
like, I don't know. Like, you're like watching TV and like, you know, obsessively drinking coffee. And I wanted something more hands-on, basically. So, so I've been, was doing, you know, like behind the scenes stuff there, but I've recently, you know, been bartending and doing that, getting back into that swing.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that's nice about bartending. And this kind of goes back to you talking about being on tour and I'm going to go party with these people. It's like exciting to be around new people, to meet new people. Sure. And that's one of the things that everyone loves about being behind the stick is the, that interaction you get with people. You know, I mean, it's not always the best, but sometimes it's amazing. You know, sometimes you meet some really incredible people doing that. So so your time, we should talk about like cocktails and stuff. Are you someone who gets to create your own cocktails when you're back there at either one of these bars you're at, or you guys, it's already set up? How much play do you get?
Oh, I mean, everyone's granted, you know, equal liberties. There's no like, there's nothing you can't do, basically.
Yeah.
Both my jobs, really. If you want to fuck around, you can fuck around. But Martha is great because they have like pre-batch cocktails on draft. So it makes bartending at, you know, full volume really easy. And it's better for the guests because it's just like, boom, here it is. Like, wow, that was bitch didn't even see us making it.
Yeah, so, right. We're that good.
Good. So, just close your eyes. 5 seconds later, you'll have a drink. It is. You have to believe it to see it.
Basically. Yes.
The international is a much different spot. It's a lot more like there's like a classic cocktail section of the menu, but recently we just did a like employee, each employee like makes a cocktail for the menu. And so I got to mess around, make like a Hennessy cocktail because one drinks Hennessy. And I think Hennessy is amazing.
Yeah. What'd you do with it?
It was like Hennessy. I'm not going to give you the recipe because.
No, you can just tell me what's in it. I don't know the specs or anything.
It kind of started as like a play on like a mule, but with Hennessy. So it's like Hennessy, ginger, honey, or ginger, ginger. We use Demerara, and then Fernet Branca. So it's like a boozy bitter thing with a hint of sweetness, I would say.
But it's interesting. I was just last night I had a drink and I'm like, what is the thing in this? I'm getting like a weird honey something, and it was the Fernet, and I forgot that Fernet could do that.
Magical little thing.
It's just mixed up just right. I'm just like, oh, this is not what I'm used to always being fed shots of.
It became like the mystery ingredient that really like made that cocktail shine. I was talking with my GM Kelly, and we were kind of going through like the Hennessy and the dot dot dot. He's like, you're gonna make a Hennessy cocktail? I'm like, yeah, no one's ever done it. Like, no one's doing it around here. I don't ever see it. Nobody ever drinks it. Mm-hmm. Gotta sell it.
Yeah.
And then I made one. He was like, it's missing something. And I was like, be right back. And I just like did like a little Fernet float. And he was like, that just tied it together.
Amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, but then we kind of revamped it. And I had one the other night for the first time as a guest. And it was lovely.
And it worked. You were good with it. Well, so what do you think about that? Going through that process, creating drinks like that for somebody. And then you create music too. I mean, I always see this kind of link there that you kind of have to... You know where I'm going.
I don't know if I've ever thought about it that way. I think I'm a lot more.
Just a creative person. That's all.
You stumped me because I was about to say I think I'm more methodical in my music making, but maybe I was.
You might be. I mean, here's the thing, though. It's like you can't go in blind to either thing, really. I mean, with making a cocktail, it seems like, you knew to go get that Fernet and add it on there, and it was going to bring it together. It was going to be that little flavor that needed to be added into it. And that's like painting to me, that sort of thing. Yeah. Knowing that you have the knowledge of, oh, wait, this is going to work. And I hear music and it's kind of like something's not quite here. Mm-hmm. And then you figure out, does the drum beat need to be shuffled like this? And then you know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. Especially like working without my like counterparts in my room, like, building everything on my own. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to a podcast the other day, actually, with Phil Everum, he's like Mount Erie and the microphone guy.
Yeah.
He was talking about, it was that podcast Song Exploder.
Oh yeah. I have like many of those that I have not listened to yet.
I never listened to it before, but I just got caught up like cleaning my basement and listening to episode after episode. Mm-hmm. But he was saying something that I would paraphrase for my own, how my mind works, I think, is how I want to work with other people. I really do. Like, I want to record songs with other people, but I never really know where it's going to go. I never really know, like, when I'm building an idea or writing a song, it always starts with, a package of words and maybe a few chords that sound like it could be something. Mm-hmm. But after the bass is are set, like I don't ever like send it to someone and be like, hey, make a guitar, but put a guitar on this, but make it sound like dot dot dot, or I want the drums to sound like this, I want the keys to do this thing. I never really know until you start to get your hands in there, experiment, and like get dirty and mess it up, I think more often than not, when I'm making music, I tend to get so deep into the project before I realize that I messed something up in the beginning. That guitar is way out of tune, or this is off rhythm, or I hate the way those vocals sound. But more often than not, I'll just like carry on with it. Like, that's kind of part of the...
charm
in a way. Maybe, yeah. But with cocktails, I feel like, you can't really, there's not a whole lot of room for error. Because you got to be pretty precise,
because you got to get that balance right, or
which is why my favorite cocktail to make is a Negroni, because it's one, one, and one. You're like, boozy, it's sweet, it's bitter, You can ship 50 of them.
It's always a pleaser.
I just love the, I love that it's so formulaic and perfect the way it is without having to mess any, you know, alter it in any way. You can make it with mezcal. It's just as good.
Oh, I love it with mezcal. I do that. I'm a mezcal person, so that always makes me happy.
You would love Martha because we have a quite an array of mezcal.
That's yummy. Is that so? You became an agave person as the years went on.
Yes, most definitely.
What do you get down there in the Carolinas? Is it more of a whiskey kind of area or just beer?
Yeah, where I'm from is definitely a whiskey drinking town. But you know, you got your basics, your Cuervos, your Espolones. I went back in September. There's a little music festival down there that my friends put together. So I go back every year. They have it, which didn't happen last year, obviously. But so this past September, I was there and there's so many new bars that pop up just like anywhere else.
Yeah.
There's college and there's, you know, a population.
of kids who will drink.
It's like, I seem to go, it's like, oh, mezcal is popular. It's so much more commonplace than it was 5 years ago when Martha started, or when they opened, and Johnny, the then owner, would go down to Mexico and like meet with the mezcaleros, and he would work on their farm and they would show him how it's made and he would take bottles back with him, just a real handshake deal. And they weren't on the menu, so it was just like for basically regulars, locals, neighborhood people like myself, because at the time I wasn't working there, but I was a regular for 4 years before I worked there. So but I really got into started learning mezcal through that place and through Johnny, who really did something really special with it. And like, he's got a deep love for mezcal and the people who make it. And he just, his passion was very easy to soak in, especially when he just keeps, you know, putting glasses in front of you.
I know, right?
Try this one. Like, I think that first one was better. Let's go back. Start over.
Well, you know, I happen to be catching you at home sipping on a stout. So, you know, I always like to ask people, like, you know, when you're chilling out, you're home, you know, this, what are you listening to? What are you drinking? I'm going to look at you. I think we earlier said the default is a stout.
It's time of year, but you may not have
true.
The weather relevance that I have because I'm in Philadelphia and you're in Los Angeles.
It's true. Well, it's kind of cloudy today.
I will say yesterday, my girlfriend, she lived in LA prior to this, and it was 64 degrees here yesterday. And she looked at me and said, it's almost the same temperature in LA right now.
Because there's
still live there.
Oh, just before the holiday, I'm again from San Diego and I was going home for, you know, that day. And I'm in Los Angeles where I think it was like 61 degrees, and I flip over to Encinitas, a little beach town, to see what it is there, and it's 48 degrees. I'm like, what? Why is it that cold down there right now? It's right by the water. So, you know, you kind of forget about that. But people don't think that that's possible down here in the SoCal, SoCal stuff. However, you are not wrong. You've probably experienced a snow flurry in the last week or two, and I don't know what that is.
maybe one, but...
Does a snow flurry make you want to have stout?
Oh yeah. I like to, when it's nice and cold, I like to keep the beers outside in the natural fridge.
Oh, that's neat. So I can't even understand what that's all about.
I just go out there and like pick one out of the snow pile. Feels like something. That's like how like my buddies and I would drink when we were, you know, in high school. Cause
well, my husband's from Detroit, so I've heard those stories. Yeah.
when you're trying to hide it from the family, you're like, leave it outside.
Leave it in the woods. You just leave it in the woods.
Almost notice us stumbling. Come on.
I've heard so many stories about people leaving it in like creeks and, you know, little ponds and stuff where it'll just be chilled by the cold water and go out to the woods, grab it out. There you go.
It's like some Henry David Thoreau shit.
Yeah, totally. You know, that's why he liked the woods so much, because you could keep your booze out there. You keep your beer cold. So what are you listening to while you're sitting home on a cozy day?
I like to play a lot of jazz records at home. Geez, maybe it's all dependent on mood, but.
Well, music's always dependent on mood, right? I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, your music, which I listen to some of, and, you know, I put it for me, I don't want to say singer songwriter, but you do have that, you know, that indie, I'm like Kevin Morby or something, you know, kind of, you know, something that's got a little, it's got some atmosphere to it,
sure.
You know, not just that plaintive strumming and singing, but there's more going on around that. So that made me curious, like what you're listening to at home. Actually, jazz kind of makes sense for me to hear you say you listen to jazz because you have this sound around you.
Sure. You know, I'm trying to think what I've been listening to most recently.
Yeah.
I like a lot of hip hop albums, and I also like a lot of old, like, more modern day singer-songwriters, and one of whom is a lot more divisive than I think he should be with my fans. My friends.
And who is that? Because now I'm curious.
Connor Oberst and like Bride.
I'm sorry, who? Connor Oberst. Uh-huh.
I feel like
we should move to Sausalito. Living's easy on a houseboat. Let the ocean rock us back and forth to sleep. In the morning when the sunrise, look in the water, see the blue sky, as if heaven has been laid there at our feet.
But he doesn't. He's been hailed as like the second Bob Dylan for such a longest time. Yeah, you know, a lot of people said that. He's someone that like I don't even have a love-hate relationship with him. He has some songs I absolutely love and some songs where I'm like, he's way too whiny on this. I don't need to hear this one, you know, but I completely understand why he is an important singer-songwriter.
Think I like his,
Do you like the whiny stuff? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, those whiny records were a part of my evolution, you know, I think he's far beyond that now, but, what's the word I'm thinking of? How he puts a lot of records out. What are people called?
Oh my God. I used to think of Ryan Adams the same way because it was Adams was putting out like five albums in a year or something like that. Yeah. And I remember having that conversation with a friend and being like, he needs to stop doing that. It's too much. He's flooding his own market. And my friend was like, that's your problem, not his.
Absolutely.
I was like, it's true.
Like, why stop now, you know?
But, oh my God, I can't believe
prolific,
I forget it.
That's the word.
Thank you. Oh my God. I was so disappointed in myself for not remembering.
I wrote it down on a piece of paper and be like, make sure I use this word during the interview.
Well, you know, what's funny too, is you say that about Connor Oberst. And what's interesting is that he's someone who, as Bright Eyes, I liked here and there. Didn't there was nothing that bothered me enough to actually hate, right? I was just like, I'll just skip this song. But there was something, his solo stuff, and then he had like another, it was Connor Oberst and the Somethings,
the Mystic Valley Band.
I loved that. I thought that was great.
Yeah, cool.
And then and then the group thing that he did, the four guys, why am I spacing on that too?
Desaparecidos.
Oh, actually, I like Desaparecidos. Oh,
Monsters of Folk.
I'm thinking Monsters of Folk. That's exactly what I was thinking of. And I loved the Monsters of Folk album, where you know, everybody has their moment on that record. And I don't think of that as folk. You know, I think it's funny that they call it that.
I know.
They're playing with you.
Fun, yeah.
They're playing with you. Monsters of Folk, yo, motherfuckers.
Oxymoronic.
Exactly. So
the prolificity of someone like that allows me to like own their entire catalog and pull out a record of like, I'm feeling this way tonight and then feeling this way now. But I would say, like, even at 35 years old, I'm not ashamed to admit it, like, I still look forward to everything he puts out, and I always go see him when he plays, and I think all his projects are great, and he's one of those modern day people who for me, like, I continue to look out for and like wait for new stuff, and I try to share that with my friends, and most of them are just so anti. I'm like, but he's got like 27 records. Like, there's got to be something
that they would like. Yeah. No, I agree with you. And you know, it's interesting that you bring him up as the example when you were talking about making your metal song, your metal-ish song, and how your girlfriend was all just put it out there. And He's a good example. Not that he's done like a metal song. Well, but he's been, I mean, Despacito's got kind of rowdy everything. Oh, so they're So you have someone that you look up to who's done what you were thinking you probably shouldn't do.
Yeah. You don't have to put yourself in any box or vacuum and sort of explore music as it's meant to be explored. And hopefully people accept that. And if they don't, then, you know, the hell with them.
Well, let people know where they can find you, like the Instagram thing, but also you've got Bandcamp. Yes, that's where I found you.
It is my name, Andy Holmes.
Andy Holmes at Bandcamp. It'll say Philadelphia. That's the right Andy Holmes.
there's the Spotify thing that, but whatever.
That's out there. What do you mean, whatever? It's your music. You got to pimp this shit.
Yeah, Bandcamp means more to me than Spotify because they actually look out for the artist.
Bandcamp is actually really, I mean, they've, especially when the pandemic hit, they did, I mean, such a great job, you know, marketing out to people and getting music to artists.
Bandcamp Free Fridays. Yeah, those are.
Yeah, all that stuff. I would always push that stuff. I'm like, hey, if you ever thought about buying something, see if it's here first. You know, just look here first.
I my buddy was over at the house last night and he was telling me about a new group and I was like, or not a new group, but something I should be familiar with that he's recently discovered. I was like, oh, cool. I'll look him up. And I pulled up the Spotify page and I was like, wait, there's nothing here. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And I just hit the old Google search and there they were right on Bandcamp. And I was like, you know what? That's the right move. That's the fucking right move.
It's like, absolutely the right move. Absolutely.
Unless you're getting on like all these big playlists and getting music. It's kind of a waste, but.
Yeah. I mean, but honestly, it's the only service I think there is that actually puts a decent amount of money in the artist's pocket. So why would you not go there first unless you were unaware? Yeah. Sure. It's like, I always check there first now. Just go there first.
I will say Bandcamp should update their app and make it more accessible like Spotify is because
they're too indie for that.
That's all it takes is a little bit of a, you know,
design. Hire one engineer, one sympathetic engineer. There are a lot of musician engineers out there that could probably help them.
There's a major job shortage right now, so who knows?
And if people want to track you down to see a show one day when you're out doing that again, or try one of your drinks or anything, where should they be looking? Should they hit you up on the Instagram or?
Yeah, Instagram is, here we go. Mezcal_Ripken, as in
really
Hal Ripken, Mezcal Ripken, R-I-P-K-E-N. I'll be there. And
that's awesome.
I'll post some pictures of my adorable cat.
I'm a big fan of any pet pictures. Cats are kind of my number one, so I'll definitely be looking for that. Thank you.
Well, yeah, cats, records.
Cats, records, and booze. That sounds like a really glorious
piece. That nobody wants to hear about, you know? I'll be spreading my long hatred of American politics and so on. Yeah. you gotta keep that kind of slim these days, but
I mean, it's still got to be in there though. I mean, people got to know. So and then they can find you at Martha and the International. Sorry, I'm Independence and Music Venue in San Francisco. I used to go to. That's stuck in my head. But awesome. Well, cool.
Only find me there on the other side of the stick for the next 2 months. But after that, after January, I should be back in one piece.
In one piece. Yeah, you're waving a cast around right now.
My hands all wrapped up, tied up.
But it'll heal up. We know it's going to heal up, and then you'll be playing music and serving drinks, and it's going to be wonderful. Yeah. Cool.
Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big brass bed. Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big brass bed.
Well, some time has passed since we did that interview, and Andy's all healed up and back behind the bar at Martha and the International Bar. So go and visit him. And also, if you head on over to his Instagram, Mezcal_Ripken, you will find that
when this podcast comes out, you will have time, if you're in the Philadelphia area, to go check him out, because he's going to be performing. We're going to hear some of his music in just a moment. He's going to be performing on April 29th. So go to his Instagram to find out. And now we're going to play Andy. Here is Andy Holmes with Astronaut. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.